I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. An article in the New York Times caught our attention, and we've talked about issues of employment and unemployment on and off for quite some time now. The article is titled, Caught in a Revolving Door of Unemployment. And the article indicated that joblessness may be an impediment to finding a job. Joblessness that lasts more than 6 months is a major factor preventing people from getting rehired. So we're going to be looking at why that is the case. Are there legal remedies to that? Why it is that unemployment for a long period of time is rampant? Are all those workers in a certain kind of job area, or are they across the board? Are they people who are very educated? Are they people who are not very educated? Are they old? Are they young? We'll be talking about all of that and what the remedy is. You keep hearing, when you hear the news report of what the jobless rate is, that the announcers always say, but that doesn't include the people who are not in the job market, not seeking a job anymore. So how do we even know how many people are in that classification? We have as our guest this hour of the program, Nola Hitchcock Cross. She is the managing attorney for Cross Law Firm, which has offices in Milwaukee and in Waukesha. She represents employees in employment law matters and has done so for a long time, nearly 40 years. She's twice been the president of the labor and employment law section of the state bar. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Those of you who consider yourself long-term unemployed, what are the legal barriers you may face to getting a job? Is it hard, if you don't have a job for a long period of time, to find another job? What do you do in your job search? Would you like some kind of safeguards to protect you from being discriminated against because you happen to be unemployed? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Nola, thank you so much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
We always lump these people, and I don't even think we have a good idea of how many people have been long-term unemployed, 9 months, even more than 9 months, and are having such a hard time that they've really dropped out of the labor force. Do you have a figure on that? Do you have a sense of how many people are in that situation?
Well, it's a little bit difficult because they don't factor things out, but the Bureau of Labor Statistics keeps a lot of different statistics. The one that we hear is one of, I think, six components, and we just heard it's about 7% unemployment overall, which everyone was cheering about. But one of the other numbers is the long-term unemployed, which includes two factors: people who have looked for work in the last year at some point, and people who are involuntarily part-timers looking for full-time work. And that number, when the 7% came out, that number was right around 13.5%. So that's the difference that we're talking about.
So are people discriminated against if they've been out of work for 6 months and they go to look for another job? They've kept looking, but after 6 months, do people say, ooh, they wouldn't say it to their face, but they say behind their back, I don't want to employ that person because he or she is, for whatever reason, been unemployed for a long time?
Well, a lot of employers are smart and they look for qualifications and experience, and that's not a factor. But other employers, for whatever reasons, and Obama has called it imprudent and silly, I think are some of the words that he used, are just having a blanket rule that they don't hire people who are unemployed at all or unemployed more than 6 months or, you know, some category. And, you know, this kind of came to the forefront in 2011 because there was a lot of advertisements that were listed as unemployed need not apply. And so then there was a big movement and petitions for different job placement online services is to get them not to list those types of ads and not to allow the advertisers to post jobs to exclude the unemployed. So that's kind of when this whole issue came up. But in our legal practice, it's always a factor that you have to take into consideration before someone is about to leave a job that they have. That's kind of the time to start thinking about it.
When you say unemployed need not apply, it harkens back to Irish need not apply, African Americans need not apply, women need not apply. How in the world can anybody say that in the year 2013?
Because it's not illegal. And in 2013, I mean, we've heard a lot of different comments about employment in the recession than we did before. Sometimes, you know, when people come into our office and they're being terminated, we say, well, what did the boss say? And they used to say sometimes, well, you know, it just didn't work out, or, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, now we get people who come in and say, well, what did the boss say? Why, when you asked him, why are you terminating me? And the answer sometimes is because we can. And it's just a much more brutal attitude, not with all employers, but with a lot of employers in terms of how they're terminated. And then just kind of the concept of, you know, the value of workers and that there's this big pool out there, so they're replaceable.
Mm-hmm.
And, that dovetails in with the strikes we've been seeing with the fast food workers is they're considered to be replaceable. And so the wages are low and the people come and go within the same job and they're chronically underemployed, you know, part-time and that kind of thing.
Do you sense that we're seeing a change in that in any way? Yesterday, one of our guests said that we're seeing more feisty progressivism in this country right now. Do you agree with that or not?
Well, we might be finding feisty progressivism, but we might be at the same time finding more conservatism. I mean, it does seem to be pretty polarized at this point.
Mm-hmm. So the reason, putting ourselves inside an employer's mind, the reason for not wanting to look at somebody who's been unemployed for, say, 9 months is what?
Yeah, that is the question. That is the question. I think, and to some degree, there's a justification in thinking, well, I want somebody who's used to working. They're used to getting up in the morning. They're used to being on time. They're used to punching a clock. They're used to interacting at the workplace. And if they kind of got out of the habit, maybe that's not so good. On the other hand, talking about what you saw in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, was just an article, I think, yesterday regarding a gap year. That for retirees, you know, you finish a job when you're 60 or you're 55 or even more, and that a lot of people are choosing to take a gap year and then coming back and looking for work, you know. And some employers would think, well, that's fantastic because this is a person who's had a little break and is enthusiastic and is wanting to come back to work, not necessarily from necessity but interest.
Mm-hmm. Who are the people who are long-term unemployed? Are they uneducated people? I've read that some of them are very highly educated. So are stereotypes about the unemployed, low-skill, low-wage workers, the jobs that used to be factory jobs have moved, and so there aren't as many jobs for unskilled, so you'll be unemployed. Is that what it is, or is it people who are educated?
It depends on how you count who's unemployed. I mean, at one point, the statistics were coming in. The bulk of the people getting laid off are disproportionately older white males, right? You know, that's what we learned. But in terms of who stays out, you know, a lot of it is, are you looking actively, or, you know, how you stay out? When you look at the populations who can be disproportionately disadvantaged by a rule that you don't hire the unemployed, it's often can be minorities who have difficulty getting reemployed simply because of illegal race discrimination. And in Wisconsin, we have, you know, the distinction of being, you know, the first place in terms of the black-white disparity in employment. So we have, you know, that issue. Another big area which is a disproportionate impact is disabled people and disabled vets, and also just sometimes people who are ill or people who for some reason are not looking at the present time. I mean, maybe you have a relative you're taking care of because they have health needs. There's a lot of reasons to stay out voluntarily and involuntarily that don't reflect on how well you're going to perform once you get hired.
Mm-hmm. Are you more likely to face discrimination if you're a college student who's been looking for a job for a year and hasn't been able to find anything, or if you're a 55-year-old who's been let go from your place of employment, you're making a fairly good salary and you've been out of work for a year?
Yeah, and I haven't really seen statistics on that, so I can't really guess, but it really does differ from industry to industry in terms of which segment of the population is being impacted more. With there, the older population, a lot of those areas, IT, you know, I think, you know, if you're on information services and you've been out 6 months, well, boy, you're a dinosaur. You're behind. And sometimes, too, with sales, kind of the PR where, you're not out there and you're not building your connections and your network, they think you're also kind of a dinosaur. So, I mean, there's some, I think, industries and areas and services which maybe are a little bit more concerned about people who are out, particularly older people who have been out for some time.
Mm-hmm. So are there legal remedies that unemployed, if you feel you've been discriminated against simply because you've been unemployed for 9 months or more, are there legal remedies for that now, or is there a lack of labor law on this issue?
Well, a typical lawyer answer, yes and no. The no is that there is no, it's not illegal to discriminate against people because they're unemployed per se. The jobs bill in 2011-2012 included a provision that would prohibit discrimination on the basis of unemployment status, but that, of course, did not pass. Some states, I think four or five, have passed discrimination statutes that prohibit discrimination on the basis of unemployed status. California just passed it, and it was just vetoed by Governor Jerry Brown for some reason. And there are about nine states where the legislation is introduced and in progress, may or may not make it out. We haven't seen anything in Wisconsin on that issue. So that's kind of the status of the whether it's illegal per se to just flatly say unemployed need not apply. However, when an employer saying unemployed need not apply, this can have a disparate impact on certain populations and could be considered to be discriminatory, particularly if there's surrounding information and evidence from the employer about their other habits. I mean, in isolation, this isn't something where there's a lot of cases on it because it's kind of new. But the EEOC has put out some 57 Congress people, congressmen and women, wrote a letter to the EEOC that this was an issue. They did that in 2011. EEOC put out a statement that this could have disparate impact, could be illegal discrimination against minorities and against disabled people in particular. I would add against older people as well. But again, it's not per se. So you would have to prove that disparate impact in the pool of applicants, and you really want to have some other information about the hiring practices of that employer. In other words, if the employer hired lots of African Americans in Milwaukee but had a per se rule, no unemployed people, you're not going to be able to make a case that it disparately affects, adversely affects the minority population.
Can you even get records, and is there a difference between public employment places and private industries?
Absolutely. Public, we have open records. We can get information about the comparison employees because, as you really are alluding to, discrimination is comparison, comparison, comparison. Otherwise, you need to file a complaint with the Equal Rights Division and the investigator can get that information. Sometimes, as an attorney, we'll just write a letter of inquiry to the employer and say, could you tell us how this is not discrimination in terms of who you did hire and why. And a lot of times we'll get an answer back, which satisfies us that there's no claim. Other times we get no answer and we just, you know, file a complaint. Investigator at the Equal Rights Division, if you're in Wisconsin, or EEOC, if you want to go federal, can get all of that comparison information.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls, and here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. Nola Hitchcock Cross is our guest this hour, managing attorney for Cross Law Firm. We're talking about people who are unemployed and unemployed for a long period of time, and the discrimination, it seems like fairly obvious discrimination to me. Maybe you have a different point of view when the long-term unemployed are urged to not apply for certain jobs. What in the world is that all about? Who is being hit by long-term unemployment? Does it indicate that in order to get this huge number of people, I guess that we're looking at millions of people who are in the long-term unemployed category right now. The number has dropped a little bit. The recessionary high jobless numbers were 6.7 million. Okay, that's probably gone down a little bit with unemployment going down a bit, but there still are a lot of people long-term unemployed, and that number has gone up since 2007. So what's the answer to it? Is there a government stimulus program that's necessary? Do we need to create jobs? And what jobs may they be in order to get some people who are having a very tough time of it back to work? Here's our phone number. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And, we're on Twitter, too. That's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's hop to phone calls. The long-term unemployed this hour of our program with Nola Hitchcock Cross, managing attorney for Cross Law Firm. We start our calls with Vivian in Green Bay. Hi, Vivian.
Hi. My comment is after 50 years of private and public employment, I've noticed a big change that affects job seekers. When we used to list people from whom a reference could be secured, now what people are getting are verification of employment notices. So if these people think that a former employer might give them a good reference, they might not. They might simply say, Joe Smith worked here in this department from to, and there's nothing else. So it would be a good idea for them to really ensure that they're going to get an honest-to-goodness reference.
And companies just aren't taking the time to do that, or what's the reason for it, Vivian?
I believe it's bureaucracy, because the letters come from HR, not necessarily from the supervisor on the floor. And I think there's a move to be less responsible for another human being's performance once they leave your employment.
Mm-hmm. Nola?
I think that's entirely correct. And I think part of it is the employer's concern about liability. There have been some cases about liability, although they're extreme, where an employee is engaged in extreme sexual harassment, that kind of thing, and then there's a reference and there's been some liability. So the kind of the backlash to that has been no references at all and just like call some automated number and get a verification of employment. I think there are a lot of things, though, that employees can do to work around that, to be able to get some type of reference for a new employer so that they can get a read on how the employee performed. For example, what you want to do as you are working is to make sure that you collect and retain anything which gives you an accolade. If you have a performance review, you want to, you know, so many times I hear, well, I don't have a copy of it. You are entitled to get a copy of every single performance personnel document that relates to you. You can ask once every 6 months under Wisconsin statute and get the whole thing. You want to make sure that you retain your performance review so you have those things to show a prospective employer, which acts kind of like a letter of reference, actually. The other thing is don't discount just little emails. Great job on that project. Really worked well with the team. Keep those emails, and you can use those as references. In fact, they're much better received by prospective employers than letters of reference because they're more candid. They're at the time. They're actually about something concrete. They're not just kind of esoterical letters of reference that one supervisor might give you because they're a friend of yours or something like that. So those are the things that are reliable, and those are the things that you want to maintain to protect yourself if you think that you might be transitioning your employment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Vivian. And who knows when we're going to be transitioning our employment, so it's good for all of us to keep that. Let's go to Jason in Cadet. Hi, Jason.
Hi there. I'm wondering what the effectiveness of job fairs and career fairs, craft fairs, county fairs, state fairs, renaissance fairs, livestock fairs, youth fairs, and sports fairs are.
All those fairs, huh?
I think that's a fantastic question. It's not really my area. I don't have any statistics on that. But I do think just generally, and that comes into the category of networking, is that you want to maintain and acquire, you know, whatever contacts you can when you are unemployed, so that, you know, LinkedIn and, you know, Facebook, in terms of, you know, your availability. There's a lot of issues about those social media that probably has a whole show possibility, so you want to be careful what you put on there. But networking at job fairs and the like is certainly part of that networking, and you want to participate so that you can get and maintain contacts. Mm.
And thank you, Jason, for the call. Getting back to references, I was thinking as we were talking here, are companies under any kind of legal obligation to provide a reference for a potential employer? Do you have to, or can you just say, hey, no, we're really busy in this office right now. We don't do that.
Not only is there zero obligation by employers to provide letters of reference, there's zero obligation by employers to provide letters of termination. And frankly, the most important part of a letter of recommendation is to confirm a consistent characterization of the departure. That's the most important thing. Rather than saying Susie is the best thing since sliced bread, is to confirm the characterization of the departure, so that if it's a layoff, if it's an elimination of a position, you want to make sure that you can verify that to the prospective employer. And that's one of the reasons why some employers don't want to hire the unemployed, because if you're employed, they know you have a job. If you're not employed, they don't really know how you left, and they may not have any verification about how you left. So you have to be, you know, careful about what you do about that. And a lot of times, you know, an employer is reluctant to give a letter of reference, but don't stop there. If they say no, ask and obtain a letter of verification of this person was laid off, this person's job was eliminated, we restructured. That tells a prospective employer what they want to know. A lot of employees think that the most favorable thing to say is I resigned. I think that's probably the worst. I think it's probably the worst because a prospective employer thinks that if you tell them you resigned, either you quit in the middle of a recession, which just shows that you're probably a stupid idiot, or two, you walked out and you're a hothead. You know, the employer doesn't want to hire, you know, either somebody who just, you know, kind of quit and walked out or is a hothead. And so they a lot of times, too, they just don't believe that. They think, you know, three, you're just a big fat liar. You really were fired. So what you want to do is get a verification. Maybe you did resign. Maybe you resigned because you had to take care of a family member because of their health. Maybe you wanted to go back to school. Maybe you wanted to do travel. There are a lot of reasons, but to get that verification, if it is a resignation, you want to get that verified so that the prospective employer doesn't think that you actually were fired.
And how completely do you need to, if you did resign, and for all of the aforementioned reasons that you just said and more, how careful do you have to be about writing a description of all that you did during that time period? You know, what a wonderful caregiver you were, or how much you learned because you went back to school. Do you need to be really complete in filling in the blank?
You mean on an application mm-hmm. type of form? It depends on how the application is set out. A lot of times employers rather discuss all of that in an interview. But, of course, you got to get that interview. So, you know, you want to put in – I mean, I think the number one thing that you want to do when you're applying for a job is to communicate to that employer that you want that particular job. That's the job you want to do, as opposed to communicating that you're hungry and you want some salary. And it really doesn't matter. There was just an article, too, and I think the Wall Street Journal, about the kind of underemployed and grabbing that first job mm-hmm. and whether that's a really bad move to just take that first job. And a lot of people say, well, what are all these people unemployed for? Why aren't they just working? Why don't they take some job? Mm-hmm. And that can, just like the stigma of unemployment, the stigma of unemployment can also haunt you in getting back to the career path that you had been on.
Let's go to Ron in Eau Claire next. Hi, Ron.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
With the long-term unemployed, not only the references that have an impact now, but your credit score. And a lot of these long-term unemployed people, obviously their credit scores have probably dropped, and they seem to be a liability, just like our driver's license or our auto insurance in Wisconsin. It doesn't matter how good or bad you drive, it's what your credit score is, and that just to me is not right. And then you have the people entering jobs at $7, $8 an hour, and they're afraid to quit and try and move up the ladder because there's nothing to move up the ladder to, so you don't have the openings for the new ones to come in at $7 to $8, $9 an hour to try and keep working up. So it's like they're on this, they're in a spot where you don't have the openings because it used to be you could leave that opening job and up the ladder, keep up going up the ladder, but the ladders, the rungs have been cut out of it for now. So I just, that's what
I think. Thank you, Ron. Thank you. And you bring up a good area.
That's a really good mm-hmm. area, Ron. The credit scores is something that's new in terms of being a factor in getting hired, and it can be very insidious. And as not hiring unemployed, credit scores can be used to have a disparate impact on minorities, on disabled people as well. And one question you want to look at, is that something that is justified by the type of the job? Is it substantially related to the job? If you're working at a bank, if you're handling money, those are the areas where employers, you know, can legitimately think there might be some relevance. But many of the other jobs there just isn't, and there may be a discriminatory motive in using that as a criteria. So that's something that we look for in terms of does the employer have a discriminatory motive? Are they using the credit score not for itself but to screen out applicants because of their other characteristics that they have?
Thank you, Ron, very much for the call. How careful are, and I would imagine, again, there's a difference between public employees and employers and private employers. Are there a set of guidelines that, you know, you look at very carefully before you go through an interview process, that you have to be within the law when it comes to what?
In terms of the interview questions?
In terms of the hiring process and who you take in to interview and all of that. What are discrimination laws?
The most successful companies, a lot of studies show that the most successful companies and the most productive companies are the companies that hire solely on the basis of performance, experience, and ability to perform and work within the context of that job. Discrimination is very anti-business. It's not just anti-employee. It's a very stupid business decision, you know, to screen out people on the basis of some immutable characteristic. You know, that's the thing that you want to do in terms of training. All the rules relate to that. That caveat is hire the people who are the most experienced and have the qualifications, and don't hire people based on your own feeling of comfort. This person looks like you. And a lot of times it's not like an intention, I'm going to discriminate against minorities. It's more just a comfort level. You feel like, mm-hmm. wow, that person was just great in the interview. Why? Because they talk like you, they look like you. And it's a comfort zone. And so, you know, for employers, whether they're public or private, you know, the important thing is to train those interviewers in terms of, you know, what are they looking for, and how that works, and what the questions are. Use the same questions for everybody, you know, and they, you know, I did actually a radio show a few years ago related to other ways of screening that have a disparate impact, such as screening on the basis of name on the application before you see people. You know, you get that application, you look at the application. If the person's unemployed, you throw it in the wastebasket. If the person has a name that you think might be a minority, you throw it in the wastebasket. I mean, a lot of studies show that this is what happens with a lot of employers. Not most employers. by any means, but some. And those who use those tactics are shooting themselves in the foot because they're not getting the best employees. And that's really what the discrimination laws are all about. They're just as much helpful to employers as employees.
Well, how many good corporate citizens are out there who are really going an extra mile to make sure that they're trying to hire people who have been unemployed for a long period of time and really need a job?
And I don't know the answer to that. And I think that that's some companies are making kind of an effort, but really the absence of discrimination is what's going to make the difference. If you don't discriminate against people who are unemployed, you don't discriminate against people who have funny names, so to speak, quote unquote funny, and so on. You are going to get the best people. So going kind of affirmatively looking, in the olden days we used to talk about affirmative action, and the number one piece of affirmative action, because I worked at the university legal counsel system when I was in law school, and right then they were working on writing the affirmative action plan. And what's number one in any affirmative action plan? It's getting the pool of applicants. So how do you do that? You don't just hire the children of your existing white workers. You advertise in areas where you're going to get the unemployed, church bulletins, where you're, in terms of job placement areas, you go out and affirmatively, advertise in those areas if you want to do that. And then, once you have that pool that's inclusive, then you pick the most qualified person. That's 90% of affirmative action is getting that pool and including everybody into it so that you have the ability to select. And when you do that, you get a better candidate. That's better for the business.
You mentioned veterans earlier in this show, and it's just outrageous that one out of four homeless people is a veteran in this country and in this city. People espouse their patriotism all the time, but I'm wondering why the unemployment rate and actually the rate of being able to have a home is so low among veterans, and if there's any kind of discrimination that's going on in that regard, it's horrendous.
I don't know of statistics related to veterans who are not disabled, but there's also one of the definitions of disability for purposes of the American Disabilities Act is perceived disability. And a lot of the reason that veterans are not being hired is because they are disabled or they're perceived as disabled. And there is a lot of news out there, and that's good, about mental health issues of veterans. But I think that's good and bad because it also means that on our mind is that everybody who comes back from being in the military does have mental issues. And I think that's the bias that as well as long-term unemployed. I mean, when you come out from the military, you may not want to get reemployed immediately. You might want a little R&R. That seems appropriate. But when that happens, then, if you've been out more than 6 months, now you've got disabled, now you are long-term unemployed, and the vet is just not enough to, kick you up to getting hired. And so the disabled vets are in with that long-term unemployed as a really disproportionate group. And that's unfortunate. When you say, are there employers who are going out to find these people? I think, yes, a lot of employers are looking for veterans because they know that they have job skills and they know they have skills and discipline to be able to get to work on time and to be able to get the work done and go that extra mile and push themselves. But a lot, I think, are worried about the real and imagined mental health disabilities as well as bouts of unemployment. And that's making that employment statistics for disabled vets shoot way up.
Yeah. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the long-term unemployed this hour of the program. No evidence that they're accumulating in any one industry. They're all backgrounds. They're young. They're old. They're of all races. But the jobless rate among long-term jobless rate is persistently very high in this country, and we're asking what forms of discrimination those would-be workers are facing in this country and what can be done about it. Obviously, the best way to learn about all of this is through our guest, but also from your experience. Nola Hitchcock-Cross is our guest this hour, managing attorney for Cross Law Firm. She has twice been the president of the Labor and Employment Law section of the state bar. She has offices in Milwaukee and also in Waukesha, and has been representing employees in employment law matters for a number of years. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to more phone calls for Nola, and let's go to Janet in Madison. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I was being bullied at my workplace, and after working for 10 months to resolve it and going upstairs, I wasn't able to get any attention to it and eventually resigned. I did not think it would be hard for me to find another position, but I am finding that difficult. Part of it's I'm 59 years old. That could be why I can't get another position. Or it's perhaps because I've been telling them when they asked me why I left my last job that I was harassed. What should I tell them?
That is the question. That is the question, Janet. And that's a really good fact situation, because we get a lot of calls about people who are being bullied at work and how they should handle that and, you know, that kind of situation. So I'm going to answer this in two ways. One is what people should do at the time before they resign when they feel that they're being harassed, and then talk about what happens in your situation, you know, when you walk out. And we get a lot of calls from people that say, I resigned 5 minutes ago, and now I'm picking up the phone and calling an attorney. That's not the time to do it. When you say that you were harassed and you were bullied, and then you kicked it upstairs and nothing happened, when you see that handwriting on the wall, for whatever reason, either the employer's coming after you, or you just think that it's not going to work out, or you feel that you're being harassed and you may need to make a transition, that's the time to start putting those feelers out there, because what's the topic of this show? The long-term unemployed. And so you want to start making a transition at that point. And, you know, we will work with employees a lot of times to assist with the transition. We may never surface in a case at all. There may not be a case at all. We may work with the former employer, you know, to make that transition, to have the appearance of employment, so that, you know, maybe when you are getting some severance, or maybe you can take some leave and you can still represent that you work there while you're in the process of looking for another position. That's hugely important, and we talk about all the nuances of that. But your question really is, well, that's interesting, but I did quit, and so what do I do now? And as I said, when you tell a prospective employer that you resigned, you know, they think you're a liar or an idiot or a hothead, and they don't want to hire anybody like that. So, you know, and when they say you're harassed, does that mean you filed a case, you didn't file a case, and, you know, all that kind of stuff? And that can make, you know, a new employer kind of weary as well. One thing you have to do when you say, what should you say? You got to say the truth, because that's can bite you in the butt later on if you start kind of, you know, kind of coloring how things were. First thing you want to do is get some kind of verification about what happened or how you left, if you can get that from the employer or from a supervisor. Sometimes the employer will not give you a recommendation or even an employment verification, and they won't even let their supervisors do that either, and there's no law that requires them to do otherwise. So sometimes what you can do is get a letter from a former supervisor who has maybe had the same situation you have and left also, even a former coworker, to kind of say, you know, how well you were performing there. Because right now you just don't have much to go. You don't have much for a new employer to really gauge to figure out exactly what happened. So you want to look at, you know, look at your performance review. You know, see how that looks. Look at if you have any good emails about what a great job you did on a project. See if you can find a former supervisor that you had who's not there, who can maybe verify that and get some of that information. And then, you know, you may have also a personal situation. You may not have just had a push out of that employment situation. You may have also had a pull. I mean, there may have been family reasons. A lot of times people want to, if they are going to make a job transition, they want to take off the summer when their kids are home. You know, there may be a personal spin, too, that you can explain why you decided to go out at that time and that you had personal situation, you know, going on in terms of that hiatus. Sometimes, too, you want to take a class or go back to school a bit because that can provide an explanation for a gap in your resume. So if you've got some classes there, that might explain why I wanted to leave. It wasn't a right fit for me, but also it's I wanted to retool.
Thank you, Janet, very much for your call. What about the age? She said she's 59 years old. Are we seeing rampant age discrimination, or as the baby boomers get old and they take up a huge percentage of the population, is there less discrimination because everybody's old?
There's more and more and more. Discrimination on the basis of age is a very increasing area. It's increasing very rapidly. As we said at the beginning of the show, when the recession hit, the biggest casualties were the older white guys. In some of the industries to get reemployed. And this is, again, it's industry by industry difference. A lot of places now want to hire people who are 59. They're proven commodities. Mm-hmm. They know that they are going to be able to work and fit in. But the area sales area, the IT area, so a lot of areas where age is a deficit and a problem. And when you're knocking on doors and you're just getting no response and you know you're perfect for that job, you want to investigate what that is, and you can make a call, a follow-up call, find out why you didn't get the job. But you can also, if you don't have any information, you can file a complaint with the Equal Rights Division. It's one piece of paper. You just fill it out. It'll take you 5 minutes, and the investigator can get that comparative information. Did they hire a 20-year-old who didn't have any experience when you were right there 59 years old and you had the experience? You don't know, but that's the way to find out. And I often tell people, you don't have to hire an attorney. It's really a question. You know, I believe I have been discriminated mm-hmm. against on the basis of age, and then there's an investigation process, and the investigation comes out with an initial determination of probable cause to believe you were discriminated against because of age or not. At that point, you can decide how to proceed.
Thank you, Janet, for the call. Mike in Madison, hi.
Yeah, I often hear people say, you know, why don't they just go get a job, you know, I owned my own business a couple of years ago, and right at the beginning of the economic collapse here, and I had to shut the business down, and it took me almost a year to find a job, and I applied everywhere. I was applying places like McDonald's. This was a construction business, a high-end woodworking business, and basically, you know, I'm fairly skilled. I'm good with the numbers. Good with physical labor. I can do just about anything, and no one would hire me having been self-employed under the premise that I'm overqualified and that as soon as the economy picks back up, I'm going to leave and go start another business.
Right.
And I kept telling them, you know, I'm just about to lose everything. I'm going to be on the streets here shortly. I will take any job that you could possibly get me. And literally applied to McDonald's, the big box stores, everybody, and turned down. And almost a year later, and just surviving doing odd jobs for friends for that year, literally boxes packed, stacked at the door, ready to go. And a guy calls and he's like, "Hey, you applied to me last year about this time. Just wondering if you were still looking for work."
Aww.
And I said, "Absolutely."
Aww.
And I started the next day, and I've been here for 4 years now, well, 3.5 years, going to be 4 years this spring. But anyway, advice for people that, you know, just once again, advice for people that's a tough position to be in. And didn't have any insurance, didn't have any financial
right.
backing support. You can't qualify for being self-employed. You don't qualify for any type of assistance, government assistance. And anyway, people all the time, they say, you just go out and get a job. Just go out and get that job. I literally was applying to my highest month was 50 applications out in 1 month.
Wow.
And I applying to everywhere. Just
yeah.
couldn't, no one wanted to hire someone that had been previously self-employed.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're working now. And it's important to remember where we've been, because there, for the grace of God, go I. It could happen to, it's happened to me in my career. It's happened to all kinds of people that you lose your job and you're in a position as Mike is in. It's not easy, and he remembers that.
And that's what's so we really appreciate about this question, Mike, because, you know, you now are in the sweet spot. You found what you were looking for, mm-hmm. but you remember where you have been and that anybody could be there. And you're so much appreciate this question, because it points out a lot of issues and a lot of opportunities, because you were in the trade, so you had a skill. I mean, you were a skilled employee, and yet you couldn't get reemployed. What to do? You know, what to do when you're knocking your head against the wall 50 times in a month, right? Mm. Periods of recession and high unemployment, worker cooperatives are on the surge. We always have worker cooperatives around, particularly in Wisconsin. And our office is very involved in cooperative law, housing cooperatives, consumer cooperatives. Mm. But worker cooperatives are the ones that really peak in the recession. And so when you're saying that you're going out and doing odd jobs for your friends, you know, if you put that in previously we're a business owner, you can kind of put those two pieces together and find other people like you and put together a worker cooperative, which means you're not taking all the risk like you did when you owned your own business. But you also are not, you know, just waiting for that job to happen, and you're kind of making that job happen. And the skilled trades are perfect area for a worker co-op, because there's little overhead compared to, you know, a factory, for example. And you've got some connections from your former business, but also everybody's got some friends who need repairs. And, you know, to put that together with a worker cooperative, where you've got a bunch of people who can market together, who can share their skills together, and can take bigger jobs, because there's not just one of you doing the odd jobs, but maybe there's 5 or 10 or 20 of you, so you can get the bigger jobs and do the bigger marketing. That's one way to get employed, is to create your own job, not necessarily as a small business owner, but as a worker cooperative member.
Thank you, Mike, so much for the call. Let's try to get to one more call and one email. Time is getting short, everybody. Dave in Milwaukee. Hi.
Oh, hi. How can we make sure that our employment or human resources department isn't discriminating on the basis of the names? You mentioned that there was some discrimination based on funny names. Could you elaborate with regard to that?
Yes, Dave, but I don't think you have anything to worry about. The statistics show that employers who wish to screen out minorities use names as a first way to do that. So if your name is Dave, they're going to schedule you for an interview. But if your name is Tashiana or something that they perceive, actually that's a Russian name, but if you perceive it as an African-American name, the employer may just file that in the circular file on the floor. That is the issue with names, is that they're considered to be code words for race.
Thank you, Dave. And a quick email from Paul. How can you pursue legal measures when you have no money to pay a lawyer? The matter of who has resources and who doesn't furthers the disparity regardless of what the law may say.
Such a good question and so important. A couple of factors do make it possible. As I said, if you're going to file a discrimination complaint, you can do that yourself. They have somebody at the Equal Rights Division in every office that there's an Equal Rights Division. They have someone there to help you fill out that form so you can get that started. The other thing is, after quite a bit of fight in Wisconsin, we finally were able to get through the state Supreme Court in a case called Glory Watkins versus Milwaukee County, the discrimination cases are now, even the Wisconsin ones, are fee shifting, so that if you do prevail, the employer ends up having to pay your attorney's fees.
Thank you so much for being with us. A very informative hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Nola Hitchcock Cross, managing attorney for the Cross Law Firm offices in Milwaukee and in Waukesha. She represents employees and employment law matters and has done so for quite some time. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing the hour, and to Robin as well for on-air production, and KP Whaley here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio. We'll return for another hour. We talked about Common Core standards last week. Now we're going to talk about the GED. Starting in January, the GED exam is going to change. It's going to be linked to the Common Core academic standards. It's going to be a lot tougher, and we'll talk about how much so